Fridays at 10 a.m. We cover local, national, and international social justice activism, including those who come to D.C. from across the nation or from across the world to speak truth to power. Whether it's the war machine, climate change, the movement for black lives, healthcare, education, the economy, housing, voting, corporate power, immigration, criminal justice, or environmental justice. Check out On the Ground, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital, Fridays at 10 a.m., here on your station for jazz and justice.
Freedom. My name is M1. I'm half of the legendary Tell It Like It Is, Everything Is Political rap duo Dead Prez. And this is WPFW, Washington, your station for jazz and justice.
This is a journey.
Would you join me, please, in welcoming me?
Redeem a full of culture.
I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day, or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice, roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to The Collision. He's Etan Thomas, he's Chuck Modiano. I'm Dave Zirin here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM, WPFW, trying to change this world one broadcast at a time. Etan Thomas, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, Dave. How you doing?
I'm doing my thing, doing my thing. How are you, Chuck Modiano?
DZ, I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm all right, I'm all right. Chuck, tell us who our guest is going to be at the bottom of the hour, please.
Our guest at the bottom of the hour is none other than Sean Blackman. If you haven't checked him out in Darker Than Blue on WPFW Fridays at 5, along with Jackie Lukman, he'll be joining us, giving us an update from the protest in front of AIPAC yesterday. You don't want to miss it.
Important stuff. And we've been doing our thing here in Tacoma Park as well, trying to get a ceasefire resolution passed. I've got a lot of thoughts about that. I wouldn't mind sharing if it's all right with everybody. But first, Etan, what are things going on in your neck of the woods, man? What are you seeing out there at this intersection of sports and politics?
I mean, it's interesting. You know, we you know, me and you are part of this, you know, group of athletes that are, you know, speaking out and trying to, you know, get their thoughts and opinions about what's going on. And it's just interesting the level of fear all around that so many athletes are having on this particular subject. And we talked about this before, and why there is such a silence on this subject. And it hasn't really, you know, changed too much, but me and a few, you know, guys were talking about this a few days ago. And guys are really, to be honest with you, they're nervous about speaking out on it. That's basically what it is, in fear of repercussion. And that is a real sentiment that is out there, both in the NFL and the NBA. I don't know about the other leagues, but for the NBA and the NFL in particular, it's really out there. And that's, you know, that's disheartening. That's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. Especially when you think about like We're in a city, D.C., 80% of the city is for a ceasefire. Mm-hmm. You can't get the city council to even bring it up for a vote. And I'm trying to think in my political life where I've seen such a disjunctive break between mass sentiment and political leaders basically saying, hey, you know, that has nothing to do with us. We're not going to do a thing about it. I heard the story last night from the great Reverend Graylin Hagler about approaching a member of the D.C. City Council and saying, who do you represent if we have 80% of the city wants a ceasefire? And he said, he looked at Reverend Hagler and he said, I don't represent anybody.
Wow.
Wow.
Just straight up to his face. And it's just that gap is really striking to me about like where sentiment, because it's one thing if we're like that lone voice in the wind and people are like, well, I'm not going to touch that because that's too crazy. It's like people on a mass level are saying the United States is funding this war on Gaza and the United States has a moral responsibility to do whatever it can to stop it. And all the U.S. can do is defund the United Nations Relief Agency and then send like this military ship and turn our armed forces into a food distribution service that isn't even getting the food to the people who need it. And it's a staggering set of events. Atan, has anybody said to you that they wanted you to kind of tone it down a little bit?
That no. You're
too far?
I haven't heard anything like that. I've just heard the same things from, you know, even before when we talked, you know, I guess a few months ago about this, and hear people saying that, you know, they appreciate me, you know, continuing to post about this on social media or to speak about this on different platforms or anything like that. And then they just express their, you know, fear of why. And that was expressed on the call that we were on. The Jews are part of Dave, and that sentiment has just been repeated a lot to me. But no, I haven't heard anybody tell me to, you know, necessarily tone it down. I don't really live in the comment sections too much, so I don't know. You know, a lot of times when you post something and you see it's 100 comments, you're like, oh Lord, I don't even look in there because it's going to be people upset. But no, I mean, this isn't something that you could be quiet about. You know, I mean, because it just keeps getting worse and worse, and it's. It's interesting. One thing I hear, and I want to ask your opinion on this, is people want to know what they can do to help with the actual aid, you know, getting to, you know, the people of Gaza, the people, you know, Palestinians. And it's people are leery, to be honest. I don't have to, you know, put any particular names up there, but there are people who are raising funds. And a lot of people are leery about, okay, should I contribute to this? And this is the only thing that I see that is, you know, trying to give any funding or any aid or anything like that to people who need it. What do y'all suggest of what people can do? Because I hear that question a lot.
What do you say to that, Chuck? I mean, if people say to you, well, what can we actually do? Or is aid possible to even get in if we put our money towards that project? How do we even begin?
You know, it's a great question, and I'm going to make it this next week to do the research to give the best possible answer after talking to many Palestinians. But what I will always generally say, if some new initiative popped up this week or last week, that's not the one. Or even in October, there have been people who have been doing this for many years. I've been covering Palestinian Americans and allies in the streets for 10 years in D.C., who've been raising funds. So I even have locally, I love Maryland to Palestine. They've been out here in 2016, 2018, 2019. Palestinian youth movement has been out here. Now, as far as specifically getting aid, give me a week. I'll do the best possible research and speak to the best possible people and have a very direct answer for you next week.
Well, speaking of the Palestinian youth movement, somebody who I've been trying to get on the show here, and hopefully I'll have some news about that in the week to come, is Natasha Cloud.
Mm. Mm.
Terrific.
Yeah, she's great. She's great.
Not just a terrific player, but she chose the Palestinian Youth Movement as her grassroots organization beneficiary this season.
I didn't know that. That's
something. Oh, yeah. Oh,
that
yeah.
is something.
Absolutely. And, you know, she's not local with us here, but she anymore. But what she is somebody who, I mean, you should, she does warm-ups wearing Free Palestine hoodies.
That's your next article if you didn't write that already, DZ.
No, this is an article. Believe me, I'm looking into this. But it's the giving to the Palestinian youth movement that's just like, wow. Go Natasha Cloud. And when the Palestinian youth movement announced it, she put that right on her Twitter page with a Palestinian flag emoji, like, you darn right.
Mm-hmm. Like, fear.
Don't get it twisted. And so, you know, people who are doing that, though, I mean, again, it does feel few and far between. I mean, that's the other thing, Etan, is that it doesn't feel like there's a lot of folks in the mushy middle. It feels like there's a lot of folks who are really scared and a lot of folks who are really bold. And
yeah, but it's not a lot of people who don't, you know, and this is the hard part for me, even though it's the understanding part, and not even talking about just athletes, just people in general.
Yeah, people.
That it's hard. People don't feel comfortable speaking on this topic. But their sentiments are there if you speak to them privately. You know what I mean? Or you know, or they message you privately or it's something, but there's a lot of people, they don't even feel comfortable liking a post that says Free Palestine on it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? No matter what else it says. I mean, that is the sentiment that we're in right now. And it's crazy because there's a lot of people who are doing such an amazing job. Got to give a shout out to Khalid Bey and everything that he is showing consistently. But it's interesting that even if they make it in the plainest, simplest, like, you know, can you be in support of blocking children from having food? You know what I mean? That, like, you have to strip down all just the simple humanitarian aspect. You know what I mean? The human part of it. And even that people have an issue with speaking against. And it's just, I don't know. It's sometimes it's disheartening for me to see personally.
Yeah. I think, and I'm curious what you think about this, Chuck. I think it's like we have to be thinking in terms of taking steps forward, even if they are imperfect steps. And even if they are frustrating steps, we have to keep thinking to ourselves, how do we keep pushing forward with a movement to bring sanity to this situation? And just as an example, last night, we actually did get a ceasefire resolution passed in Tacoma Park, the first city in the state of Maryland to get one passed.
All right. That's a family endeavor, right, DZ?
Whole family involved in that one, no doubt. And a lot of families involved in it. It took 7 weeks. It took people of all possible backgrounds and generations coming in and speaking at the mic and pushing the city council. And that being said, you know, the resolution really wasn't that great. You know, there's that old expression, a horse by committee is a hippopotamus. Okay. And they presented a big old hippopotamus and dropped it right on our laps last night. You know, it wasn't great. Like, it didn't say permanent ceasefire. It said bilateral ceasefire. It used certain language that was certainly very objectionable to a great deal of us. It had to be like 50 million words instead of just saying we want a ceasefire now. We want to let in immediate food and aid. We want to stop sending weapons, you know, as Tacoma Park residents. We believe in peace. You know, something really basic. You know, it had to turn into something that tried to please everybody and ended up not pleasing the people on the on the people who are really trying to fight for a free Palestine and for a ceasefire. But all of that being said, and with every critique I can say about the resolution itself, it really does matter that now cities in Maryland can go forward, like Baltimore can go forward and say, we're not the first city to have to do this, but we can be the second. You know, it's like having that. It's like pulling that string on the sweater. You know, sometimes you wish you could just rip the sweater off with two hands or take a pair of shears and just take the sweater off. But sometimes you got to pull the string. And I do feel very proud of the fact that we started the pulling of the string last night. So I will say that.
So say a little bit more about the language, because that was when you were saying it, I was like, well, that's interesting. So what? Just the language that's always used. And, you know, you hear that in the different, you know, language of politicians who all of a sudden maybe calling for a temporary ceasefire or a, you know, talk about that language.
Well, first, you know, I have great objections to the phrase when they called it in the resolution the Israel-Hamas war. Yes. You know, Hamas is a political party, and the people being killed are kids and civilians.
Right.
And you wouldn't call it like, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu's party is called the Likud party. They're not calling it the Likud-Hamas war. You know what I'm saying? Okay. And when as one person said last night, when Tacoma Park, this was just a very important line, when Tacoma Park passed a resolution opposing, in very simple language, unlike last night, opposing the U.S. Invasion of Iraq, it didn't call it the U.S. Ba'athist Party War. No, it was called the U.S. War on Iraq. Mm. And just like this is a war on the people of Gaza, this is a war on the people of the West Bank, this is a war on the Palestinian people. And so to call it the Israel-Hamas war, honestly, is a form of propaganda unto itself that has no place in a resolution like this. Another use of the word language, of the language that I didn't like, is first they called October 7th, they called it the terrorist attacks on the Jewish people, the worst attack since the Holocaust. Look, as somebody who had family die in the Holocaust, I take great exception to the way the Holocaust is being used and weaponized throughout this whole process. And I stand with Jonathan Glazer, who won that Oscar on Monday, and said that very thing, that he doesn't want his Jewishness and the Holocaust weaponized in the service of the dehumanization of Gaza. And of course, he's been pilloried from side to side for daring to say that. That's been a big part of my week, has been defending him and writing articles about that. But it's just to say that they use that kind of loaded language as well in the resolution, which a lot of people, including myself, had a great deal of problems with. And then that question of bilateral ceasefire, it makes it sound like you're talking about a war taking place between two sides that are going after each other, and not one of the most highly militarized states in the world enacting a war on a defenseless population. Like, the language needs to reflect that. And it was bitterly disappointing that they did not. You know, a teenage Palestinian brave young person got up to the microphone last night, and she said, I voted because, you know, Tacoma Park's got the voting age at 16. And she said, I voted for the first time in the last election, and I was so proud to do it. And you have failed me. You know, I don't only feel unseen, I feel deeply disrespected, and I feel scared, and you have failed me. So that's to say, like, and I think it's good. Like, this is a tough thing to say, but I hope people can understand the totality of it. I think it's good that we approach the city council with every bit of criticism, of shaming, of all the ways in which they came up short in this resolution. And all of that being said, I'm still also very proud that we were able to push something through, because people didn't expect us to be able to do it. It took 7 weeks. It took so many hours of people's time who have full-time jobs, including here in my home, and we got it through. And now, even if it's not what we wanted, and even if some of that language, frankly, makes my skin just, you know, absolutely get put up with the ugly kind of goosebumps, I do feel like we performed a righteous service for the people of Maryland, who can now go forward and say, it happened there, it can happen here.
That's good stuff.
And an educational service. Well, I think there's a way to look at this in the sense that, and this is the way I look at it. You're going to say something easy.
Oh, no, I just wanted to make sure that made sense, that, like, while being very critical of what was eventually passed, I'm also very proud it was passed.
Yeah. Well, this is how I make sense of it, because I don't think resolutions are going to get us there. I don't think Congress is going to get us there. So, for instance, you had, I believe, 18 people in Congress with the ceasefire resolution sponsored by Cori Bush. Now it's up to, like, you know, close to 70. But it's not even close to there, and it won't get us there. What that increase from the 18 to close to 70 represents are the people in the street protesting, changing their career chances to win another election. So I look at that as what the people are doing. I don't think the resolution is going to save us. But what I do believe is that these are steps towards changing public opinion, and only that, not changing the politics right now, because you're right, there is some awful language in there. There's no war here, you know, 30,000 and whatnot. And I also take exception to any time, and you just mentioned it, someone says the biggest attack on Jewish people since the Holocaust. Well, it's not the biggest attack on the region since 2014. I'm talking pre-October 7th, okay, not the 30,000 since. In 2014, when 1,500 Palestinian civilians were murdered and 500 children were murdered, and if you look at the other side of the ledger, it was only 6 Israeli civilians and 1 child. So it's 500-1 on children, 1,500-6. So October 7th in the region, it's the greatest attack since the 1,500 civilians were killed in Palestinians in 2014. So to me, that makes more sense than to have put 1,000 Israelis next to 6 million. I mean, it's so ridiculous that anytime someone says that statement, they have to be stopped. This is since the Holocaust. We're putting 1,000 next to 6 million. Are you mathematic? What's mathematically wrong with you? This is such statistical manipulation. It drives me nuts. So I just had to get that out. It was a little therapeutic, I might add. I have to get that out because I hate when they say that. And it minimizes what happened in the Holocaust. So not only are they minimizing the Holocaust, they're weaponizing the Holocaust.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, that's definitely what's intentionally done. I mean, if anybody, you know, and this is part of the reason why you hear so many people who are afraid and hesitant to be able to speak out against what's happening right now is because of the weaponization. You know, if somebody wants to speak out on the genocide, the ethnic cleansing, everything, they're immediately, you know, kind of bombarded with, you know, accusations of anti-Semitism, denying the Holocaust, or, you know, not being, and it's like immediately happens. And it's like it's a playbook. It's a response, you know. Many people are not comfortable with them, but this is something that has been strategically done for a long time. I think it's just gotten more and more prominent. But I always have to tell myself how encouraging it is to see so many of the people taking the opposite route. So many of the people, you know, especially people, in the East Coast. So, you know, we've seen from D.C. and New York mostly. But, you know, I will say different parts of the country who are letting their voices be heard, taking to the streets, protesting, not in our name, you know, different Jewish people who are saying, no, this doesn't represent us. And they're repeating the fact that, no, what is Zionism is not Judaism. Please don't confuse the two. And they're saying that. That's why, that what you're doing, Chuck, you know what I mean, as far as showing all the protests and showing all of the people speaking to combat a lot of this, the responses that are consistently out there, that if you do disagree with what's going on right now, then you are anti-Semitic. You know, and that it's so important to hear specifically, you know, Jewish people say that. It's so important to hear that from them. So it's needed. So I know I've said this before to you, but I'm encouraging you to keep doing what you're doing. Keep showing those images. Keep showing those interviews from the protests, because, like I said, it's needed. It's definitely needed.
And that's why, thank you, Atan. And listen, here's the bottom line. We have this conversation every month, you know, of athletes and entertainers. And, you know, I've moved on. I can't wait for more Atan Thomases. The Palestinian people children can't wait for more Atan Thomases, whether it's speaking about an Iraq war or coming out now. Yes, I love when a Jaylen Brown wears the bracelet, but we don't have that kind of time, right? So it's really the people that we're talking about, and the people that I try to target is the people who are aligned. I'm not talking about people who may lose millions of dollars. Jonathan Glazer, I appreciate his Oscar remarks. And the U.S. Holocaust Survivors Foundation came after him. AIPAC came after him. ADL came after him. That's part of the deal. But you know what? There are people in the street. There are millions in the street who have been coming out. And it is our job to change that conversation, to open it up so that more high-profile people feel compelled to come out, to open it up into that Overton window, which has been done to the point where we've changed the polling. We've changed Biden's polling. We've changed polling on how people see Israel and Palestine. The people have done that. So we have the power. And I think if we just hit the people who are on the couch and believe what we believe and get them more active in the street or otherwise in the community, and I'm for going into your local community for ceasefire resolution, more for the cultural aspect than the political gain. I think for those reasons, then changing public opinion, all of that matters. And then the more famous people, they'll come along on our coattails.
Well, it's interesting because what you said at the end there, Chuck, when I want to encourage everybody to try to pass ceasefire resolutions in your community, not because necessarily it's what's going to end the carnage, but I can tell you from our experience in our home, it has opened up like who we know in our community. There are so many more incredible people in Tacoma Park than I thought existed.
And you're building community through that process, what you're saying.
Yeah, and it's like we're almost building like, it's not almost, we're building like a rebel tendency in Tacoma Park, because Tacoma Park has this reputation of being all liberal when the reality is it's more like Pep Squad, you know, progressive except for Palestine. And it's a lot of people more concerned about their property values than they are about low-income housing, which is so desperately needed inside the Beltway. Now, you flip that and you say, well, actually, there are people in this community who feel like I feel, who feel like my family feels, who feel like, you know, there's been a little bit of bamboozling going on in terms of the gap between what we think Tacoma Park is supposed to be and what it actually is. So we're creating like this rebel front of people who are like, well, actually, we want this area to live up to what it was decades ago, to what it was when we moved here, and to not have it be this kind of pre-professional land of folks who like to pat themselves on the back for being liberal or progressive. Two words, by the way, that Reverend Graylin Hagler said last night he's had enough of. Liberals
and progressives. Let's ban the word progressive.
Or only use it as a way to say, look, yeah. It ain't enough. It's not what we need right now. But I felt his frustration, but I also feel like this tremendous sense of community here that frankly I haven't felt in some time. And it was through the process of fighting for that ceasefire that we found each other. And now we're talking about all sorts of other things like, all right, how do we use the fact that we now know each other to do community education, to do book readings, to do poetry readings, to do every, you know, to do rallies, to do every possible front of activism to be able to really turn this into a ceasefire community, not just a community that was able through dogged work to push through a sort of jagged, disjointed resolution that, you know, left us not too happy. Because we are happy that we found each other, and we are happy that other cities in Maryland now get to say, hey, they did it, we can do it too.
Well, Dave, you just described some of the intangible aspects of covering protests. When people say, well, that protest didn't work because they don't see a direct linear connection to legislation or something like that. In the protest community, half of it is building community. Half of it is a young person for the very first time came to that protest and were radicalized, and it was life-changing, and it changed the trajectory of their personal life, or it built relationships, and those relationships turn into organizing. So all those intangible aspects that you just described are also part of the protest scene that does not get its due credit.
Amen. But and then one last thing, I know we're headed towards the bottom of the hour and we've got a guest at 10:30. I just want to say also, because I'm hearing it through the grapevine, that Etan, people are reading your stuff.
Yes.
And it really does matter. And so, because I wanted to say that, Etan, because, you know, at the start, you know, it did sound like it was weighing on you, the degree to which people are feeling that fear factor or feeling intimidated. But when people read your stuff, it gives them a little bit more strength. It gives them a little bit, you know, it makes their back a little more straight. And we can't have enough of that right now. You know, there's no separation to me between street fronts and cultural fronts and inner, you know, we need everything right now, because you never know what's going to light a spark for others.
I agree. I hear you. And I'm getting a lot of, good feedback, from people in support. It's sometimes it can be frustrating when people support in silence. And we talked about it with a few, because a few guys, Tariq Abdul-Wahad, said the same thing. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, we talked, and he's experiencing the same thing as well. And it can be frustrating sometimes, but it's also understandable at the same time. But thanks for the encouragement. I do appreciate it. Yeah.
You never know when you're going to spark someone. Never, ever know. Mm. And you keep putting it out there. The famous line, courage is contagious. People need to see someone else in their shoes doing what they do before they jump on board. I'm not going to influence the athlete community, but Etan can. So let's do it.
Let's do it, because they're either going to be influenced by Etan Thomas or Aaron Rodgers. But that's another
right? Yeah.
That's another conversation altogether. Goodness gracious. Well,
why'd you do that, DZ?
Sorry.
You're right, though.
It's the ex-Jets fan in me. Well, we're at the bottom of the hour. I have to take my daughter to an appointment. All is good here, but it was one we got to do. Everybody out there listening, we're going to come back at the other side of the station break. We got a great guest, Sean Blackman, coming up. And we also have Etan Thomas. We also have Chuck Modiano. We've got a heck of a show for the next 20 minutes or so. So for everybody out there, you got my heart. Everybody need to hit me up. You can do it at Edge of Sports. Etan, great to talk to you, my man.
As always, always.
Chuck, thanks for getting this guest. I'm going to be listening on the radio.
Let's go.
All right. So we'll be back right after this on The Collision, WPFW 89.3 FM, your home for jazz and justice.
This world of calamity, dirty looks and grudges and jealousy, and police where you abuse them authority. Me the clowns when I know about variety. Boom, the youngest veteran I go murder them slow. Rock a muffin sent to call me from the bush bungalow. When I watch it make a clear road, my voice now figure out. Emerge from the darkness with me big blood to glow. Me yammer them a slam and spectator get low. Some work with a big like Bamba Bigelow. Bust off trigger finger, trigger end and trigger toe. A two gun me and me bust them in a stereo. Cause I got to keep on walking on the road to Zion. We got to keep it burning. Without a doubt, don't make them take you like who them took out. Jah will be waiting there, we a shout. Jah will be waiting there. Clean and pure meditation without a doubt. Don't make them take you like who them took out. Jah will be waiting there, we a shout. Jah will be waiting there. You got to keep on walking, yeah. On the road to Zion. You got to keep on walking, yeah. On the road to Zion.
You gotta keep walking, y'all. You gotta keep. Sometimes I can't help but feel helpless. I'm having daymares and daytime, wide awake, try to relate. This can't be happening, like I'm in a dream while I'm walking. Cause what I'm seeing is haunting. Human beings like ghosts and zombies. President Mugabe holding guns to innocent bodies in Zimbabwe. They make John Pope seem godly. Sacrilegious and blasphemous.
All right. Magic Mike, you want to tell us something about that?
Well, E picked it out, but it's Damon Marley featuring Nas. It's called Road to Zion.
Okay. Thank you, Etan. I appreciate that. So listen, we're at the bottom of the hour. And, you know, we didn't even talk sports, the first part of the hour. We talked a little bit about it. But we have Sean Blackman. And Sean Blackman is part of the WPFW family. If you haven't checked out Darker Than Blue, which is 5 p.m. on Fridays, you need to check that out. If you want more of the same, but we're going to strip the sports out of it. And Sean Blackman is not just somebody who's been a radio personality for a long time, giving the truth, giving the censored truth that we don't get in media, but he's out in the street. And he's out in the street regularly, whether it's Free Palestine, with George Floyd. And he was out in the street yesterday covering a rally at the AIPAC headquarters, Etan. And Sean was there. Sean, are you with us? Okay, so Sean, yeah, unmute. So while he does that, I'll give a little bit of background on this rally yesterday. Okay. As he does a little bit of background on this rally, Etan, but really there have been rallies all week, every week, multiple rallies. Yesterday it was in front of the AIPAC headquarters, and all week there have been rallies at AIPAC because AIPAC is having its conference, and that conference influences our congressional leaders. Four of the top congressional leaders were slated to speak, whether it's Republicans Mike Johnson and Mitch McConnell from the Senate and House, or whether it's Democrats Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries. The top congressional officials are there, and they're literally writing legislation, whether it is legislation on ridiculous resolutions that equate anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism, or it's legislation about banning TikTok, which is really saying the young people are being too educated about what's going on in Palestine. So AIPAC conference has been going on this week. There have been protests all week against them. And we got Sean Blackman here to maybe put some of that in perspective, not just yesterday's protests, but really the role of AIPAC within this larger Palestinian discussion. So, Sean, are you here?
Yeah, I'm here, Chuck. How's it going?
Listen, it was great. It's going great. You were really, yesterday, the mic was about to blow up. You were telling us all, putting AIPAC in perspective, putting this uprising in perspective. So tell us a little bit about where we are now and then the rally yesterday.
Absolutely. Real quick, because when I first hopped on, I heard you mention something about TikTok. And I just want to sort of reiterate that, because I want to remind people that back in the earlier stages of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the White House was actually meeting with TikTok content creators to ensure that they had the quote unquote correct stance on Ukraine, i.e. the U.S. imperialist stance. And people can look that up if they're interesting. But just to show how the state is viewing a platform like TikTok, and particularly the influence it has on young people. But to go to your question about AIPAC and yesterday's demonstration, a group of organizers gathered outside of the AIPAC building as the conference was going on. And what's important to understand about AIPAC, of course, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, is it is perhaps the most prominent, well-funded, and sophisticated organizations of what we call the Israel Lobby. And the Israel Lobby is really just this network of individuals and institutions and corporations that work at different angles, but they all work toward the same end of justifying the existence of the Zionist State of Israel, which, of course, entails justifying the genocide against Palestinians. Now, some people work on it from the political aspect of it, like AIPAC. Others work on it from a land aspect in terms of that, you know, helping to promote these illegal Zionist settlements and things like that. But like I say, it's all part and parcel of sustaining the apartheid state itself. And see, what AIPAC does as a lobby group is it basically lines the pockets of politicians in both the Democrat and Republican Party so that these people will be champions for Israel in public. That's really what AIPAC boils down to. And this is evident in the fact that the top four congressional leaders are slated to speak at the AIPAC conference as it's going on. I mean, that includes House Speaker Mike Johnson, a Republican, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, a Democrat, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican, and a House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, a Democrat. And Chuck, I remember not that long ago, you posted a clip of Hakeem Jeffries, a black man, at a rally saying Israel today, Israel tomorrow, Israel forever. And for those who know a little bit of history, they know that that's a direct take on the racist segregationist George Wallace, who said that segregation today, segregation tomorrow, and segregation forever. And so in that day, George Wallace was talking about American apartheid, or what we call Jim Crow. And you fast forward a few decades and somehow you have a black man using some of those same words to justify Israeli apartheid. But you see, this is precisely the goal and function of institutions like AIPAC. It is to ensure that American politics are always married to or inextricably linked to the ongoing existence of Israel and the ongoing genocide of the Palestinians, which is precisely what that means. And I want to take just a moment, because I've said this a couple of times about justifying the existence of Israel, because, you know, people ask this question all the time, I think often dishonestly. But they say, well, doesn't Israel have a right to exist? As if this is some kind of gotcha question. No settler colony has a right to exist. We should be clear on that. No settler colony has a right to exist. Not Israel, not the United States, not Canada, not Australia, or any other country we could rightly file under that label. The mere fact of their history as a settler colony is what invalidates their quote-unquote right to exist. So I just wanted to explain that. But coming back to AIPAC, this is a, frankly, foreign lobby group. And this is what I always point out to people, because the United States spends so much time, so much energy. You look in the mainstream media, you listen to government officials. They're always fear-mongering about alleged foreign interference in the United States from Russia. I mean, there are people who will go to their grave thinking that Russia somehow swayed an American election. From China, there's all, you know, this frankly racist, xenophobic, like yellow peril type talk about Chinese spies and surveillance balloons and all that type of stuff, even though the thing, I think it was the size of like three school buses. And so all of these sorts of things, the U.S. is always braying about supposed foreign interference. But yet, when it comes to apartheid Israel, that's not called corruption. It's not called foreign interference. It's just called lobbying. You know, it's just considered good politics. You see what I mean? And so this is how the sort of whole question of Israel became so firm, if you will, within American politics. Because we always have to remember that Israel could only exist with the direct support of imperialist governments. Their first sponsor was Britain. Go back to the Balfour Declaration, where Lord Balfour, a racist, a colonizer, and an anti-Semite, basically helped give the blessing of the British Crown for the establishment of the Zionist state. And now the U.S., which replaced Britain as the world's hegemonic imperialist power, now has that. And so we know that Israel is crucial to Washington's interest in the Middle East region. Israel calls itself the only democracy in the Middle East, but in reality, it is there as a bulwark against democracy and a bulwark against any kind of real sovereignty in a region that is profoundly important, both geostrategically and in terms of its deeply valuable natural resources. And this is a point that I always, always try to drive home to people, no matter what aspect of the Palestine question that we're talking about. The Zionist state of Israel, the apartheid state of Israel, is crucial for the maintenance of imperialism itself because of how it's located. And this is why we have to see the struggle for Palestinian liberation as linked to the struggle for liberation for poor, working, oppressed, and colonized people all over the world, including here in the United States. It's not a coincidence that there's a long-running Black American and Palestinian solidarity movement. We look elsewhere. It's no coincidence, no surprise that there's a long-running Palestinian and Puerto Rican solidarity movement, or a Cuban and Palestinian solidarity movement. You see, the struggling peoples of the earth have always been clear on the plight of the Palestinian people and have cast their lot with them, because we understand that what ties us all together is our suffering under this imperialist system, and understanding that the best way to defeat this system is by organizing, standing in real solidarity, and continuing the fight back as we have been.
Let me jump in here and just ask a quick question. I definitely appreciate all of your comments. I think one of the things that I keep hearing people echoing is their fear, and the legitimate fear, that regardless of who is in office, you know, nothing's going to change as far as the U.S.'s position towards Israel, which is you have the, you know, full support of America, the funding of America, and, you know, everything you do is justified in, because Israel has a right to exist. Meaning, whether it's Trump in office, whether it's Biden in office, or any Republican or Democrat thereafter, what is your response to that?
Yeah, this is a good question, and it's absolutely true. And this connects with the whole conversation around AIPAC and the way that AIPAC works with both ruling parties, because they understand that it literally does not matter who's in the White House, who controls the House, or who controls the Senate, or any of that, because both ruling class parties are sold out, if you will, completely to Israel. And it's funny because there are rank and file Americans who seem to think that the Democrats are better on Israel, or, you know, somehow less warlike in their overall orientation. There are even people that will tell you that we have to vote for Joe Biden, because if you don't vote for Joe Biden, then Donald Trump will come into office and it will somehow be worse for Gaza. I don't know how you get any worse than a genocide. That's what's happening right now in this moment as we speak. How do you get worse than that? The only real escalation I can think of is a literal nuclear option, which, to be frank, I'm sure some within the fascist Israel regime would like. It's eminently impractical, so I don't see that happening. But this just is a result, I think, of the profound fear-mongering and propaganda that have kept so many people on this hamster wheel of lesser evil politics. If Joe Biden wins the 2024 election, we will have four more years of a genocidal pro-Israel regime. If Donald Trump wins, we will have 4 years of a genocidal imperialist pro-Israel regime. So what does that mean? That means that the branding of the leadership doesn't matter, whether it's a donkey or an elephant or red tie or a blue tie, all that superficial stuff that ultimately doesn't mean anything. That doesn't matter. What matters is that they are both ruling class parties. These are capitalist parties, right? Parties of the capitalist class, not of the masses of people. And their entire existence, frankly, hinges on the maintenance of the imperialist system itself. So we have to understand, we cannot vote genocide out of office, because the two parties that have access to that office are fully committed to genocide. So instead of fooling ourselves and thinking that we can vote out one party that's somehow going to be less genocidal than the other, we have to attack the system that is upholding apartheid Israel, and that is really responsible for this genocide against Palestinians. And that's the imperialist system. And I always remind people that imperialism is just a highly advanced stage of the capitalist system itself. It is the logical conclusion of a system that seeks infinite expansion on a planet with finite resources. And so we have to understand the class character of this and who is it that is most impacted by imperialism and the machinations of Washington. It isn't the wealthy. It isn't the well-off. They may be, depending on where they are and what context, it may impact them in some way. But when we talk about materially and seriously on a day-to-day basis, it's the overwhelming majority of poor and working people. So that is the class character of the struggle, rooted in capitalism, communicated through imperialism. And so as such, it is the imperialist system and capitalism that birthed it that we have to organize to attack and overturn and bring in a system that is focused on people's needs instead of corporate profits. And that, in my opinion, is a socialist system. And I have to say this, and I'll, because I want you all to get in here, and I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that if people are looking for a presidential ticket that doesn't support apartheid Israel, that has stood unequivocally with Palestinian resistance from the very beginning, and one that has been in the streets for Palestine from the very beginning, then I want to strongly encourage folks to check out the ticket for the Party for Socialism and Liberation, Claudia de la Cruz and Karina Garcia, because these are two working class mothers who are not only clear on the issue of Palestine, but are clear on the kind of struggle and movement that has to be built to end these abuses once and for all.
Yeah, Claudia's been in the street. I had the pleasure to interview her. While you're here, I'd be remiss. You were very involved, Sean, in the George Floyd uprising in 2020. And you've made not just symbolic connections between home and abroad, but very tangible connections with regarding to policing in America and what's going on in Gaza. So could you speak a little bit about that, which you've spoken to so many times?
Absolutely. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind in the most broadest sense are things like the 1033 program. And the 1033 program is this mechanism through which all of this extra military equipment and weapons finds its way to U.S. police departments. And so there's a broader issue about the sort of militarization of the police in the United States that has taken place over the years that is directly related to the escalation of U.S. military power, because it needs that. It needs that stick, if you will. It needs the stick of military force to help maintain the empire. That's why there's 800, 750, depending on how you ask, some odd bases and installations all around the globe. So that's one thing. Then there's this point that we always raise and that we should continue to raise, is that every year about $3.8 billion goes from our tax money without our permission to support apartheid Israel. Matter of fact, just since October 7th, the Pentagon has sent $1.6 billion worth of troops that are there to help support Israel in their genocidal effort. And so all of that money, instead of going to us, the masses of people here in the United States, people who really need it, we're in a time of inflation, when we're in a time of people struggling, looking for jobs, where the price of everything is going up, rent is going up, gas is going up, food is going up, but the wages aren't going up with it, when people don't have the health care they need, when young people can't get the quality education they need. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day who has three kids, and his son's really bright, doing well. And he said, yeah, he's doing so well, they're going to put him in a lottery to see if he can go to the gifted program. How sick is that, that you put children in a lottery program just so they can get an education that meets their intellectual needs in the so-called greatest country on earth? And so you see, another aspect of this is how the issue of Palestine just exposes the contradictions and lies of U.S. imperialism so much in so many fundamental ways. But the number one thing that people in the United States need to understand is that our material conditions here and what we need and all of that. The fact that we don't have so many things that we need is directly tied to the suffering of people, not only in Palestine, but all over this earth. And so that means that we have a particular duty to organize here in the belly of the beast to really organize this revolutionary struggle.
So, Sean, told we listen, we got a rap. You're on Darker Than Blue. How can folks find you at WPFW and more?
Well, me and Jackie Lukeman are on every Friday at 5 there on WPFW. You can also follow us on Twitter at DRKR, then blue. That's at DRKR, then blue. Thank you both so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Sean. Appreciate it. And appreciate you, Atan. Appreciate DZ. I'm not going to say stay frosty, but we'll see you next week, and we're going to keep on fighting.
The talk show Africa Now airs Wednesdays at 1 p.m. It's a modern view on historical issues concerning the entire African world, addressing how African people are participating in globalization, ways in which the rest of the world continues to exploit African resources, uncovering labor violations by corrupt politicians and Western government powers. Learn what's happening now in interviews with artists, activists, scholars, and a host of other experts each episode. Listen Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Africa Now is also available on iTunes Podcast, Google Play Music, as well as SoundCloud on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, asking you to support WPFW. We ask you, please, to go to the website and make a pledge, maybe $47 or $470 if you can, or $47 a month, to WPFW.org. Hey, if you want to get dinner and a show in New York, if you want to bring a guest with you, maybe your partner or a daughter or son, a friend you want to meet up with in New York, watch the broadcast of Democracy Now! Live, 8 in the morning, sit on the set as we broadcast on over 1,000 stations, and then I get to personally host you for a meal, and we will toast WPFW, and it is an amazing time. We call it dinner and a show, you and your special guest. That's a $2,000 tax-deductible charitable contribution that goes directly to WPFW. Go online at WPFW.org. And by the way, you don't have to know when you can come to New York, where Democracy Now! Is based. Just make that call or go online at WPFW.org. Make the pledge, and then we'll get in touch with you and work out the details. Maybe you're coming to New York soon, or it won't be for a year. This doesn't expire because we don't want WPFW to expire. Again, go to WPFW.org. And thank you so much.
Celebrating 20 years, the New African Film Festival, presented by AFI and Africa World Now Project, brings the vibrancy of African filmmaking from all corners of the continent and across the diaspora to the DMV at the AFI Silver Theater and Cultural Center in downtown Silver Spring from March 15 to the 28th. The festival features 26 films from 16 countries, including 3 years premieres and discussions with filmmakers. Explore the diversity of new filmmaking from Africa at the 2024 New African Film Festival. Tickets and full schedule at AFI.com/silver. That's AFI.com/silver. Or call 301-495-6700. 301-495-6700. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Sophie's Parlor is the original women's radio collective. Wednesdays from 3 to 5 p.m., the best music divas on radio at 89.3 FM and sophiesparlor.blogspot.com.
This is Dr. Ron Daniels, founder of the Haiti Support Project, known as HSP. If you've been listening to WPFW, you're aware that Haiti is on fire with gangs threatening to seize power. HSP is hosting a forum for leaders of the Montana Accord movement in Haiti to discuss the urgent need to organize to compel the U.S. government to respect the sovereignty of the First Black Republic by supporting a Haitian solution to the crisis. Thursday, March 21st, 7 o'clock p.m. at the historic Metropolitan AME Church, 518 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C. Doors open at 6:30. Free and open to the public? That's a forum on the crisis in Haiti. Thursday, March 21st at the historic Metropolitan AME Church. For further information, visit the website ibw21.org. That's ibw21.org. For the love of Haiti, I'll see you there.
The talk show Africa Now airs Wednesdays at 1 p.m. It's a modern view on historical issues concerning the entire African world, addressing how African people are participating in globalization, ways in which the rest of the world continues to exploit African resources, uncovering labor violations by corrupt politicians, and